Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Iowa PBS. For more than 45 years, Market to Market has provided perspective on the commodities, from farm gate to dinner plate. Find three new agribusiness podcasts each week, the M2M Podcast, Market Analysis, and Market Plus, all available wherever you subscribe and listen to podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. When you think about stunning formal gardens, the images that come to mind might transport you to Europe. If you think about American gardens, maybe you think about some of the grand estates on the East Coast or gorgeous West Coast gardens where anything will grow. Midwestern gardens, Iowa gardens in particular, don't get a lot of attention, but Beth Cody wants to change that. She is a dedicated gardener who blogs at gardenfancy.blogspot.com, and she has just published a new book, Iowa Gardens of the Past, Lost and Historical Gardens of Iowa, 1850 through 1980. She lives near Kelowna and is on the line with me now. Hello, Beth.
Hi, Charity.
I'm so glad to have you here. And I want to kind of start with a description of this book, because, I mean, first of all, 1850 to 1980, that's a lot of time. And the book is just chock full of photographs and illustrations that you have dug up through time. So tell me a little bit about when people open the cover of the book, what are they going to find?
I have always been interested in historic pictures of gardens. I think there's just something so fascinating about not just the gardens themselves and how the styles were different in the past, but also, you know, the people, and especially pictures that have the gardeners in them, and just imagining what their lives were like. And there have been a lot of books published about garden history, which is, you know, the study of how people garden in the past, but there were never any about Iowa. And so I started to look around. I was really curious why there weren't any pictures of Iowa gardens in them, because I knew there must have been some beautiful Iowa gardens here. And so I started to search for pictures, and I looked everywhere in historical archives like the State Historical Library, other libraries, museums, old magazine pictures, countless issues of old magazines, postcards for sale that I found on eBay. And so I have made a collection in this book of these beautiful pictures that I found, because I found literally hundreds of illustrations of gardens and photographs and garden slides that were shown in slide projectors. And also I found that whenever I would find a beautiful picture and I tried to do some research on who had done the garden, I found all kinds of interesting stories. Each of the gardens has a beautiful story behind it. So I tried to tell something about what the gardener's life was like and when they lived. And sometimes they even wrote things about their gardens. So I would include that information as well, quotations from interviews that were done about their gardens, or in articles they wrote themselves, if they were an expert in some particular kind of flower. And I tried to get a sense of the voice of the people who were gardening and what it was like to garden in each of the decades since our state was established. And so that's what I've tried to communicate in our book.
Well, and you start us off in the 1850s, when Iowa was really the frontier. And I guess I would think about, you know, the people who were drawn to Iowa, of course, came because they could get land. And the whole point was to first to grow enough food to live on, and then grow enough food to make a living. I can't imagine that gardening for beauty was much of a priority at that time. So tell me a little bit about what we know about growing flowers and beautiful things during that frontier period.
Well, you're absolutely correct about that, Charity. At the beginning, of course, people just didn't have time or energy or the money to grow beautiful ornamental gardens around them. They were busy. They were planting, you know, vegetable gardens and crops and clearing fields and building cabins. And it wasn't until probably the 1870s or so that people started to turn more attention to ornamental gardening. And at first, that was mostly what we would just consider landscaping, just planting lawn and trees in an arrangement that was pleasing to the eye. And also, in the country, you would want to have windbreaks, to plantings of trees to shield the house from wind out of the north and the west. But after that, people started to grow more flowers during the Victorian era in the late 19th century. And there was really a mania for tropical plants and tropical flowers at that point. And so the things just developed. Every decade, there was things became more refined and less of a frontier, and people could concentrate more on gardening for beauty and for pleasure and not simply just to grow vegetables and that sort of thing.
Well, and we've spent this hour talking about the 1920s in Iowa. And the 1920s, it turns out, was a really fruitful period for gardens in Iowa as well. Tell me what was going on.
Yes, the 1920s and the 1930s, surprisingly enough, even though there was a Great Depression then, those were both, I would say, a golden era of gardening enthusiasm here in Iowa. And that was for a number of reasons. A lot of it, I think, had to do with publishing. You know, Better Homes and Gardens was established as a magazine in 1922. And that was meant for people who were living in small towns and in cities to plant beautiful gardens around their homes. The garden club movement was also very active. That's when most of the garden clubs in Iowa were established, was in the 1920s. And there were at least a couple hundred garden clubs that were established by the 1930s. And in almost every small town had its own garden club. And then there were many seed companies like the Henry Field and Earl May companies were really active in the 1920s, very successful companies. And they weren't just seed companies. They also each owned a radio station and would broadcast. And this was originally it was to promote their seed and nursery industry companies. But they had live music broadcasts and millions of people visited Shenandoah, which is a small town in the southwest corner of Iowa, where both Earl May and Henry Field were established. And there was just a flurry of interest and activity in gardening, particularly during the 1920s, and that even continued into the 1930s, despite the Great Depression, because things like garden clubs didn't cost a lot of money to join if you were just visiting each other's gardens and talking about gardening and improving public areas, and which is what they did. So, yes, it was a really fascinating period.
Well, and of course, a lot of people, I think, now remember Earl May more than they remember Henry Field. And the story of those two men and those two radio stations in Shenandoah, Iowa, this is something definitely people should take some time and look into. But for people who aren't familiar with Henry Field, what was his claim to fame?
Well, he started a seed and nursery company in 1899 in Shenandoah, again in the southwest corner of Iowa. And he started from a really tiny company, but by 1920, it was a large company. It employed 400 people and had huge seed buildings right next to the railroad tracks in town, so they could load up their orders and send them right out on the railroad. But he realized in the early 20s that radio was going to be the new advertising medium of the age. So he built in 1924 his own 500-watt station in Shenandoah, KFNF, and they had live broadcasts. And he planted huge, impressive show gardens around his radio and seed company buildings. And millions of visitors made their way to this. I mean, Shenandoah is 5,000 people as a population. And he was sending out millions of catalogs. I estimated probably 40% of Iowa households received a catalog from the Henry Field Company. And Earl May was also in the same small town. So that's really amazing to think that this tiny town had these two really large, successful companies. And Earl May was slightly different. He also did the radio station, had a seed and nursery company. He established a number of retail stores, though, in lots of them in Midwestern cities. And, of course, that's what we're familiar with now is Earl May's retail stores, which still exist and still have probably 20 or 30 of them in the Midwest. So Henry Field did not last through, I think, maybe the 1950s or 60s. He was done, although the name, I think, is still out there. But, of course, Earl May is still owned by the same family and still has wonderful stores to buy those beautiful spring flowers in every springtime.
Well, and you start the book with a couple of photos from the Earl May Gardens in Shenandoah that are just wonderful to look at, and those gardens are still wonderful to look at today. There were a few really charismatic people, in addition to Henry Field and Earl May, that really shaped horticulture and gardening in Iowa. You mentioned Better Homes and Gardens. Tell me a little bit about some of the people behind that.
Well, Better Homes and Gardens magazine, like I mentioned, was established in 1922. It started by E.T. Meredith, and the Meredith Corporation still exists in Des Moines. It's a huge corporation now, but he had long, probably for 10 years, he had wanted to start this magazine, and finally he was able to do it after World War I, and he envisioned a magazine that would bring gardening and homemaking topics to homemakers, and both men and women, really, especially for the gardening topics. And he had lots of pictures of gardens that, in fact, a lot of them in the 1920s and 30s were pictures taken here in Iowa, and especially in the Des Moines area, because that was local for him at that point. Probably a third of the articles in Better Homes and Gardens were to do with gardening, and often were very specialized topics. But this magazine really influenced gardening across the United States. It became a national magazine. And one Iowa figure that I think is a really interesting person was, her name was Fleeta Brownell Woodruff. And during the 1940s and 50s, she was the garden editor of Better Homes and Gardens. And this was really a very powerful position in the horticultural world, because if a company had made a new plant and just one mention of that in Better Homes and Gardens, which had such a wide readership of millions of people, could sell hundreds of thousands of that plant. And so she was really a force to be reckoned with. That was a high-profile position. She traveled the world looking at gardens and gardening products, and she was instrumental in promoting the use of full-color garden photography in garden magazines, which we can't imagine a garden magazine without color pictures in it, but that was not the rule until her generation of people in the 1940s. She was very influential in the horticulture industry and had a great deal of power as a result. And she also wrote a book, the Better Homes and Gardens Garden Book, which came out in the early 50s. And that was the best-selling garden book of all time by 1980. So she was really a very influential person in the horticultural world nationally, not just here in Iowa. So fascinating figure.
Well, you mentioned black and white photos, and your book has a whole lot of black and white photos in them. And they feel a little bit like a tease. Like, it's wonderful to see these moments captured in time. And then you think, what must that have looked like in color? Because you see people surrounded by blooms.
It's so much nicer. And it's beautiful that they were able to move to that. But it really wasn't until about the 1940s that they did that. Although there were some hand-colored postcards and garden slides from before that period, which, of course, it's not the real colors, but it does kind of lend a feeling of more color to it. But yes, the black and white photos are not nearly as satisfying as the full color ones that came later.
No, but it's fun to think about what it must have looked like and why the people in the images would have been so proud that they wanted to have their pictures taken with all of these blossoms, just to try to capture a little bit of that beauty. And you mentioned all of this research that you did, finding all of these photos. And I'm curious, how difficult was that to do? Some of these must have been very difficult to find.
Well, we have really good resources. I mean, like I mentioned, the State Historical Library in Des Moines and the State Historical Library in Iowa City, they both had lots of holdings of postcards and historical atlases, which were illustrations done of people's farms and homes in the 1800s. And the postcards, signed up for automatic search results from eBay to be emailed to me every time something like Iowa Garden would come up in a postcard, and I did that for a number of years. And of course, the museums and the libraries, those were a little harder to get into. But everyone I worked with, whenever I would call a library and tell them what I was looking for, they would say, okay, well, I'll look through our collections and pull out the things for you. And if it was someplace I could visit because it was close enough, they would make an appointment for me, and they were very helpful. Or they would just scan it and send the image to me, which was really nice, a great service. So there have been many very helpful librarians across the state of Iowa who helped me with my project.
Well, and you mentioned eBay, and that led you to one of your really, I think, most amazing finds, which is a stereograph photo that shows the first greenhouse at Terrace Hill, the governor's mansion. This greenhouse was built in 1867. Tell me about that.
Well, yes, I could not believe what a find that was. In fact, when I first saw it, I wasn't sure exactly what it was, but then after I did a little bit of Googling, right when I first saw it listed, it's a stereograph photo, and that's with the two pictures where you could see it, and they're slightly taken from slightly different angles.
Right, so you could make them 3D, sort of. Yeah.
Yes, and but apparently, you know, when the Terrace Hill was given to the state of Iowa for use as the governor's residence, they did not know what buildings had been there in the past, and they didn't, and they had done archaeological digging to see the foundation of the greenhouse, and they knew it was a greenhouse, but they had no idea what it looked like because they had never seen a photograph. There weren't any that had been discovered, and so when I ran across this, as soon as I realized what it was, oh my gosh! There have been articles published in archaeological magazines about, you know, the excavation study they did there, and so I knew I had to purchase this and keep that picture in the state of Iowa. And I did donate it to the State Historical Library in Iowa City, because that's too an important picture for any one person to keep in their house, which could burn down at any minute.
Right,
it would be lost forever.
No, it's wonderful. And this book is such a deep dive into just all kinds of topics and so many periods in time and different places in Iowa that we know and love, or maybe that we don't know yet, but we will love. What do you want people to take away from your book, Beth?
That Iowans have been great lovers of garden beauty for a very long time. You know, we're mostly known as farmers or vegetable gardening growers, but really there's been a huge appreciation for the beauty of flowers and the beauty of gardens designed in specific ways. And there's been really some great horticultural sophistication here in Iowa that I don't think people has come across that idea very often, and I would really like people to be able to appreciate that and to be able to enjoy these beautiful gardens, of course, because if people were, you know, proud enough of their gardens to have them photographed and preserved in that way, they're such a beautiful thing for us to be able to enjoy and really a beautiful part of Iowa's history.
Well, it is a really beautiful book, and you could spend hours and hours and hours going through all of these photographs and learning all about them. Beth, thank you so much for talking with me.
Well, thank you very much, Charity. I'm so glad you enjoyed the book, and thank you for having me on your show.
Beth Cody, she is the author of the new book, Iowa Gardens of the Past, Lost and Historical Gardens of Iowa, 1850 through 1980. She also blogs at gardenfancy.blogspot.com. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Iowa PBS. For more than 45 years, Market to Market has provided perspective on the commodities from Farmgate to Dinner Plate. Find three new agribusiness podcasts each week, the M2M Podcast, Market Analysis, and Market Plus, all available wherever you subscribe and listen to podcasts.